Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to have you here with us. It might not be under the best circumstances. You might be sitting in some heavy traffic right now, or possibly in an airport, or among places of similar places. Maybe you're on the train or the bus or something. And I have to say, I just checked, and my commute home is only an hour and a half right now. I just looked at the map, so I'll be doing that at the end of the show. So I'm going to try to make this a pleasant hour. I will try not to do or say anything that might make you want to smash into the other drivers, and we'll just all try to maintain an irenic spirit and get through it. If you're at home, getting the fixings ready and all that, thanks so much for joining us this hour. A conversation about Catholicism and contraception, the Catholic Church and contraception. And I think there are many people who have some idea about what the Catholic Church teaches. Many have a clear idea, I think a clearer idea in recent years, because the Church has certainly been doing a better job teaching about it. But there will be many who are vague on this, are unclear. And sometimes that is because we as a Church, as conversations about contraception happen, whether in the confessional or at the parish or in university classrooms or high school classrooms, those who are teaching about the Church's teaching on contraception, let's be frank, are not always convinced of it themselves and may try to elide it to some degree. And I'll confess to you, when I was young, I was among those. And so I understand it, but I don't want to deny it that that's the case. So there's confusion about the Catholic Church and contraception. So if you got that kind of confusion, you want to have somebody on the show who's written a book called Contraception and Catholicism, What the Church Teaches and Why. Our guest is Dr. Angela Franks, a theologian, speaker, writer, mother of six. She serves as a professor of theology at St. John's Seminary in Boston. And her other book, she's written two of them. Her other book is on Margaret Sanger. It's called Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, The Control of Female Fertility. Dr. Franks, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So,
I didn't know I had to have an irenic spirit. You didn't warn me about that. I'll do my best.
You know, I just assumed you had an irenic spirit. if you're a Catholic studying Margaret Sanger, you're going to need an irenic spirit.
True.
Margaret Sanger, of course, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and one of the kind of I don't know how to say it. The progenitors or the mothers of the current contraceptive kind of culture we live in, one that just assumes that this is a natural part of life, or certainly an acceptable part of life. So why does the Church bother about this so much? I think people know that about Catholics. We bother about contraception.
Yeah, right. So a lot of people exactly have that attitude, that the what we assume is the fixed point in life is the sexual revolution. And so contraception is necessary for the sexual revolution. And so people don't understand why we would opt out of the sexual revolution. And understanding some of the history of contraception and the birth control movement can be helpful in that regard. And so you mentioned Margaret Sanger. And when Sanger began to try to get contraception legalized in America, it wasn't only Catholics who believed that contraception was not okay. Every major religion, including all the major Christian denominations, did not approve of contraception. And so it's not like this is actually a weird Catholic thing. It's really a human thing, and only the Catholic Church has stayed true to the insight about what sex is really all about. But it, you know, until really about not even 100 years ago, pretty much everybody agreed with the Catholic Church on this point.
888-318-7884, our number if you have questions for Dr. Angela Franks on the Catholic Church and contraception. 888-318-7884. Is it the case, though? I imagine some will argue, well, that's a time when maybe you needed to have more babies because infant mortality was higher, or because people were farmers, or there's all kinds of arguments along those lines, and that was the appropriate societal approach to marriage and fertility for then, and this is the appropriate for now.
Yeah. So the thing that doesn't change, obviously a lot of things have changed in our culture around family and so forth. The thing that doesn't change is the nature of sex itself and of our human nature. And so what Christianity and all the other major religions grasped is that sex is the kind of act that naturally, when something goes right, leads to the conception of a baby. So sex is an intrinsically reproductive act, and that doesn't change regardless of what's going on in society. What certainly can change is how much support women are given for bearing and raising children. And that's certainly something that's worth looking at and that pro-lifers try to, you know, try to make those societal changes so that women are supported in bearing children. But the fact that sex is the reproductive act does not change. And so when people who support contraception tell us, well, you just got to, you know, change with the times or whatever, they've assumed that somehow just because we have something like the birth control pill, that now the nature of sex itself has somehow changed. And the birth control pill is not that powerful. And so what when people are using contraception, what happens is they're always fighting against nature and fighting against the reality of the act itself. And that means that it's a very difficult thing to do. So contraception always has user failure, which means people don't use it correctly, and so the method fails. And it always has method failure, which means the method itself is naturally going to fail a certain amount of time. To the church is the only institution still that just recognizes that basic fact that sex is still the kind of reproductive act that it has always been. And so the church encourages us to work with the reproductive nature of sex instead of trying to fight it all the time. And I think, you know, it's one of the things I looked in my book on Margaret Sanger in particular, that we've got a society that encourages women to fight against their bodies.
Yes.
You know, I once did an Amazon search, just looked up the two words, diet wars. Like all these books came up, right? I mean, it's just we have this attitude, this warlike attitude toward our bodies that we've got to fight, fight, fight. And the church is saying, whoa, let's work with our bodies instead of fighting them.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking with Dr. Angela Franks about contraception and the Catholic Church. The one thing that I think is probably universal in our media response to any questions about contraception is a universal kind of lauding of especially the contraceptive pill as a tool of liberation for women, and the implication therefore being if you oppose that, you really at heart oppose the liberation of women.
Yeah, that is just, you know, the most common thing out there. It's just, and it doesn't occur to people to challenge it. One of the things about looking at Margaret Sanger that's so interesting is you see that Margaret Sanger beginning in the 20s, 1920s, where she began to make an impact, was the first person to push this narrative, right? That women's liberation equals quote unquote, reproductive freedom or the ability to not have children. And we just assume that that's true. So like, we just don't question it unless, you know, you're pretty countercultural. And if you think about that message, what that's saying, it's actually really significant. I mean, in the 1920s, there were other people who were fighting for women's rights. And for example, the suffragettes, they were fighting for the ability to vote, right? They were fighting for property rights and education rights and all of these sorts of things. And Sanger really thought that all of that was superficial, unimportant. Why? Because Sanger really believed that women are oppressed by their bodies. So,
that's,
I mean, just think
striking.
How radical that is.
That is,
right? That's
yeah.
The message. That's what we're being told. Why are you oppressed? Not because of legal issues, not because of the society. You are oppressed because of the kind of fertile body that you have. And so it's really a deeply anti-woman attitude that says that, that says to be liberated, you have to be liberated from the healthy functioning of your body. And so when the church proposes something like natural family planning for people who have serious reasons for avoiding pregnancy, what the church is giving us is a much more pro-woman approach to looking at fertility that doesn't say in order to be healthy and liberated, you've got to reject your fertile body. Instead, it says you have to accept your fertile body and work with it instead of trying to somehow radically eliminate that fertility.
Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. Our number is 888-318-7884. Your calls and questions are welcome on the topic of the Catholic Church and contraception. If you've got questions about Margaret Sanger, we'll take those as well. 888-318-7884. By the way, you don't have to agree with us. You're welcome to call if you think we're nuts. In one of our cases, you are probably correct, but in the other, you are not. And I'll let you decide which I'm talking about. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our brother and sister Christians who may disagree with us on the Catholic position on contraception, we would love to hear from you. And those of you who may be secular folks who really do see us as not as battling against the liberation of women by saying that contraception is, in fact, not a liberating force. 888-318-7884. Right back with your calls for Dr. Angela Franks right after this.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You know what Catholic radio is? It's training for the troops. It's a interaural of the ear boot camp. The folks who listen, who grow in their faith, grow in charity, grow in all the virtues, they then go out and exert an influence far beyond just themselves. Catholic radio has an exponential effect for bringing people deeper into the faith.
Dr. Ray Guarendi thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 888-31-TRUTH, the number. We're talking about the Catholic Church and contraception. But I want to remind you, I mentioned this before, I want to try to get a couple of reminders in. Jimmy Akin has that free course on the Bible. And it's just a free video course. Jimmy's your teacher. He's going to talk about where the Bible came from, how the Bible functions, and you can get it for free. Just go to Catholic.com and click on the little Jimmy Akin free video course tile near the bottom of the page. As a matter of fact, the little script I have here says tile. I don't know what that means. I assume you will know when you see it. Yes, Darren? Okay. Yeah, you'll know. It's a tile. Of course, everyone should know what that is on Facebook, but just go ahead there and click that button and you get your, not on Facebook, at Catholic.com, and you'll get your entry into the Jimmy Akin's free video course on the Bible. Dr. Angela Franks, the author of a couple of books, one on Margaret Sanger, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, The Control of Female Fertility, and the other, Contraception and Catholicism, What the Church Teaches and Why, and we take our topic today kind of from the title of the second one. We'd like to know what the church teaches and why. Lines are filling up, but there is still one line open if you'd like to call with a question, 888-318-7884. Dr. Franks, are you ready to go to calls or anything else you want to cover
Sure.
before we do? Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to April in Illinois, listening on 91.3 FM. April, your question for Dr. Angela Franks.
Hi, Dr. Franks. This is April. I appreciate you educating other women on this topic. I don't think enough people know about it. But I am a women's health physical therapist, and I see a lot of women for any pelvic issues. And a lot of them have concerns with birth control just because of the side effects. Do you know, is there more being done in the medical field and, like, with education on doctors and nurse practitioners being taught about natural family planning?
I'm just going to give a quick interpretation of that just for the person who might
Thank
be
you.
In a loud car or something and couldn't hear. But our caller, April, works as a physical therapist. Lots of women have complications from chemical contraceptions. They want other options. She wants to know about the medical research. Is medical research advancing into the use of natural family planning?
Yeah, so I'm not an expert on this side of things, and there are lots of people who are, so I'll just give you my laywoman's perspective. But there are definitely there are advanced studies out there on natural family planning, on the health benefits, and on its effectiveness both for avoiding pregnancy, but also for achieving pregnancy. And one of the places that people can go to look for this is they can look up, it's called NAPRO technology, so N-A-P-R-O technologies. And that's one place that's geared in particular for medical professionals to learn how to do that. There's also an organization called FACTS, F-A-C-T-S, that, and I can't remember what it stands for, so maybe I'll look that up in the break, but they also have training for medical professionals, including things that gives you continuing education credits and so forth. So there actually are a lot of resources out there, and I hope you make use of those.
April, did that address the question that you had? We just had a little trouble hearing you, so I want to get back to you real quick. Was that acceptable?
Yeah, that's good. I just didn't know if like medical schools are now teaching natural family planning.
Oh, medical schools. Yeah. Do you have any knowledge about that, Dr. Franks?
That's pretty hit or miss, is my understanding. More miss than hit, if I'm recalling correctly what my doctor friends say. So it is not an easy thing to get training. Even people who get training in reproductive endocrinology or OBGYN and so forth, they are not really trained in how to cure problems. So this is an important thing to realize. So something like artificial reproductive technology or women who have issues that are, then they're put on the pill, it might be appropriate to be on hormonal, to be on those hormones to treat something, but it very well might not be. And what especially things like artificial reproductive technology do is simply deal with the symptoms, and they don't get to the causes. And so people who are trained in things like NAPRO really learn how to treat the diseases and not just kind of mess around with symptoms a little bit. So yeah, unfortunately, that's not a very common thing out there.
April, thank you very, very much for that question. As I said, lots of folks on the line to talk to Dr. Franks. Our topic, the Catholic faith, the Catholic Church, teaching on contraception. If you have questions about contraception and the Catholic view of it, you're welcome to call, whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. By the way, the one of the two of us, the sane one is Dr. Franks. All right, I just want to put that out there. I don't want to leave a possible insult floating around out there. Melanie in Lafayette, Louisiana, listening on KLFC. You are next. Your question for Dr. Angela Franks.
Hi, I have a daughter who's a fallen away Catholic, and she's getting married next year, and I was trying to talk to her about contraception. She doesn't believe in the pill. Like, she knows that it's bad for her body, you know, all the side effects, strokes and blood clots and all that. But she thinks there's nothing wrong with using like a condom or whatever, a IUD or something. And I tried to explain to her, when you're using NFP, you're still open to life, and you're still giving God a chance. Like, if it's God's will that you may ovulate early, you may ovulate late, you know, however, but if you're doing a condom or whatever, you're saying no, you're closing the door to that. And her answer was, well, if he can make me ovulate late or early, well, then he can still allow me to get pregnant if I'm wearing a condom. If he really wants me pregnant, I will still get pregnant if we have a condom or an IUD.
Well, that is true. He does have the power to do anything that's logically possible. Yeah. But I wonder how might you answer Melanie's daughter?
That's a really interesting question. So I think it's good that she recognizes the pill is not good for her body. So that's a really great thing. One thing about the IUD is that we don't actually know 100% how the IUD works. At least that's what people will officially say. The odds are very good that the IUD works really as an abortifacient. And so that means that it's not preventing pregnancy, but it's actually causing a very early abortion, or causing them all the time because it irritates the lining of the uterus. So that might be something that she doesn't realize, and that would be something important for her to know. As far as why NFP instead of those other methods, I think one thing to talk about is, you know, how aware are you about how your body works? And can you work with how your body works instead of fighting against it? So condoms, for example, are not very effective, actually, when it comes to preventing pregnancy. So why go that route? I had one of the couples I interviewed in my book on contraception and Catholicism. They said, they use condoms for a while. And then they ended up using NFP. And they said, it was so stressful because the woman said, we could have been using it when I was in the most fertile time of the month, and it was so stressful. And so there was always this sense that, like, we don't actually know what's going on and we're always kind of hoping, right? And so it actually added this whole level of stress and confusion to their sexual life. She said, using natural family planning, it was so much more transparent. She knew what was going on with her body. And so it actually reduced that level of worry that they had when they were using condoms. So I think that's something for people to think about. Wouldn't it be better to know what your body's doing?
Melanie, as I said, lots of calls, so we will have to leave it there. I hope that was helpful to you. Dr. Angela Franks, our guest, teaches theology at St. John's Seminary in Boston. And up next, from Kenosha, Wisconsin, John. John, your question for Dr. Franks.
Hi, Dr. Frank. My name is John. I live in Kenosha. So basically, I know you're not pushing abstinence-only education here, but statistics have shown that abstinence-only education is absolutely a failure. I mean, it increases teen pregnancy rates, and therefore it increases abortion rates and everything. I'm just wondering why it seems like you're so against contraceptives when contraceptives have been shown to be extremely effective.
Okay, John, thank you.
In preventing births and therefore preventing abortion.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a really common concern that a lot of people have. So the idea is if we have more contraceptive use, especially for adolescents, then we will have fewer abortions. Okay, so the interesting thing is, one thing we know, especially with the adolescent population, is that an increased use of contraception leads to increased abortions, which seems completely counterintuitive because, as you said, it seems like it should work the other way. So I talk about these statistics in my book and these studies more directly, but let me explain to you why this works. This is the kind of thing that secular economists have figured out. This isn't like the Catholic Church saying this. This is, you can find these statistics in a number of different countries, and there's a guy at Duke in particular who talks about this. So why is this? Well, what happens when adolescents are given contraceptive education? Okay, so they get the idea that, okay, one of the major disincentives for me to have sex, namely pregnancy might happen, that's now off the table, right? And so what happens is that adolescents who receive contraceptive education actually engage in more sexual activity. Okay, we also know that adolescents are basically, statistically speaking, the worst users of contraception when it comes to user failure. In other words, they have the highest rates of user failure. And this is something that's basically non-negotiable. This doesn't go away by talking more at them about how to use contraceptives. This comes with being a teenager, which, if you've known one or been one, right, you maybe can figure out why this happens, right? So they have more sex. They are more likely to get pregnant when they have sex. And so adolescents who receive contraceptive education have a higher crisis pregnancy rate. As a result, they are more likely to get abortions because they're precisely the population that's not prepared to bear a child and have a child. This kind of correlation between increased contraceptive use and increased abortion is seen in all kinds of populations, but it's especially strong in the adolescent population. So however we address the question of teen pregnancy, it cannot be through a naive sense that if we just talk to adolescents more about contraceptives, that magically they're therefore not going to get pregnant, because in fact, the opposite happens.
John?
I don't know where. Well, the thing is, I'm a health teacher, so I've done an enormous amount of research on this, and the research I've seen has shown basically the exact opposite of what you're saying. Not even making kids aware of the option for contraceptives just seems, you talk about naivety, the naivety of assuming that kids aren't going to have sex because they don't have a contraceptive option is enormously naive. What kids are going to do is they're still going to have sex. They're just not going to use a condom or not going to use another method to protect themselves. And again, statistically has shown that the rates of teen pregnancy and abortions in areas where they teach absolutely only education are incredibly higher.
Okay, let's let Dr. Franks respond. It sounds like we have a battle of different ways of interpreting data. But go ahead, Dr. Franks.
Yeah, so when you say, I mean, I'm not an abstinence educator, and so I haven't like looked at the latest statistics. There are a number of different abstinence programs, and so often the data that comes from examining those studies depends on which abstinence program you're looking at. And so there can certainly be a wide variety of quality of abstinence programs. But it is definitely the case that we see it in the British Health Services, you see it in Spain, and then the data set that Peter Arcandiamo looked at in Duke all highlights this correlation between increased contraception and increased abortion.
John, thank you very, very much for the call. You're welcome to call if you've got a question for Dr. Franks on the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception or on Margaret Sanger, eugenics more generally. All those calls are welcome. What the Catholic Church teaches on contraception and why, right back after this.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Every Catholic has heard the challenge. How can you believe that? Don't you know the Bible says? It's a challenge we have to meet. If we can't reconcile apparent contradictions between Scripture and Catholic teaching, how can our faith survive? And if we can't answer our Protestant brothers and sisters, how will they ever come to embrace the fullness of the faith? In Meeting the Protestant Challenge, apologist Carlo Broussard gives you the knowledge and tools you need to answer 50 of the most common Bible-based objections to Catholicism. Be prepared to give an answer. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Challenge today by calling 844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. There are a lot of misconceptions about the Catholic faith. We clear them up on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Walking and talking advertisement for the Boston College Theology Department, Dr. Angela Franks, showing that they really teach Catholic theology there. She's a professor herself. She's a teacher of, is it right to say professor or teacher? What do I say?
A professor. A
professor St. John's Seminary in Boston. So at the seminary, do you only teach men who are preparing for the priesthood, or do other people come to the seminary as well?
I actually teach most of the time in the lay program, so I mostly teach lay people, but I also teach electives at the seminary.
I gotcha. Okay, because I know some seminaries have that, where lay people can take classes there, but not all do.
Yeah.
Dr. Franks is the author of a couple of books, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, The Control of Female Fertility, and also the book that it gives us our theme for today, Contraception and Catholicism, What the Church Teaches and Why. She also has a website, angelafranks.com, where you can find all sorts of material on this topic, on the topic of eugenics, on the topic of contraception, and on the sexual revolution in general. That would be angelafranks.com. KatherineCatholic.com. Again, the calls continue apace, so we will go right back to the phones. Maureen in Palo Alto, California, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Delighted to have you, Maureen. Your question for Dr. Franks.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I have had a similar question to your previous caller as I was waiting on hold, and I kind of side with him when he says about how the pill would actually prevent abortion. I know a lot of these younger kids. I'm in my 60s, but I would raise my kids not to take the pill, and they would not do it, but. I know that it does prevent pregnancy because a lot of these teens that are doing it have been doing it for years and years. I know it's not healthy, it's not good for you, but it is preventing them. You hear of rare cases where, it doesn't work. Anyway, my question is, since this question was already asked, I've kind of sided with the previous caller on that one, but what about this after morning pill that can be used after sex to stop pregnancy? Say there's what is your feeling on that one? It's better to stay to be abstinent, but what is your feeling on the morning after pill?
Okay.
Yeah. So the morning after pill is more morally problematic because the action of it can be abortifacient. In other words, again, it can create a very early abortion. And that is more problematic than preventing pregnancy, morally even. So that, I think, it's its own category. But to get to your point about the preventing of pregnancy and your recognition that it's better to be abstinent. One thing I think it's important to remember is that human beings are capable of being abstinent. I mean, without the birth control pill, obviously people still were engaged in extramarital sex and people still got pregnant and so forth. But we know that the rates of sex outside of marriage were indeed lower. And we know that teen sexual activity has definitely skyrocketed post-pill, post-sexual revolution. And so to simply concede that, well, somehow people have always done this, which, first of all, is not historically true. They haven't always done it in the rates in which they're doing it now. But it also is to just imply that because people will do it, that we should just simply go along with that. And what we see, in fact, is that contraception facilitates what I call this kind of bad sex, this unhappy sexual activity that, in fact, we know is the case. So we know that teens the more sexual partners that teens have, the more likely they are to cry every day, to be depressed, to want to commit suicide, to be on antidepressants, to drop out of school, to not go to college. Like, basically anything you don't want your kids to be doing is more likely to happen if they're engaged in sexual activity. And anything you do want them to be doing is less likely to happen if they're engaged in sexual activity. And so I think it's really important for us to not just kind of throw up our hands and say, well, they're going to do it anyway, so let's make it easier. I think the important thing is to say, they're going to be inclined to do it because of the fall, so let's try to help them resist that. Let's help them resist these messages in our society. Let's give them the information. When I took health class, so granted this was a while ago, but when I took health class, people didn't tell me I would be more likely to commit suicide if I had sex, right? Like, that was not part of the curriculum. And those are the kinds of messages, I think, to really be educating people that we need to be willing to give them.
Maureen, I hope that was helpful for you. Thank you very, very much for the call. I do appreciate that there are folks who disagree with us who are willing to call, and I hope you always feel welcome here, 888-318-7884. The show is Catholic Answers Live. We're Catholics. We believe and we teach as much as well as we can what the Church teaches. But it's very generous of you to call and share disagreements, and it makes for a much better conversation. Catholics are welcome to call, 888-318-7884. Non-Catholics, even anti-Catholics, are welcome to call, 888-318-7884, although there is a $5 charge for anti-Catholics. Let us go now to Teresa in Philadelphia. Your question, Teresa, for Dr. Angela Franks.
Hi, I have a It's an interesting theory or question about the pill and the effects on the environment and the water. Because there were studies that resulted, for example, in male fish becoming feminized. If you think that this is affecting men and feminizing them, maybe one of the reasons why there are more of a percentage of feminine or gay men in our society.
Ah, okay. So do you have a theory about how that would work? Like it gets into the water supply is what I hear people say sometimes, but like these chemicals, I mean, get into the water supply. Do you have a theory before? The estrogen in the water supply.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, when
yeah, I've heard
it comes out into the and it, there's a, actually you can Google it. There are.
Oh yes, yeah. This is a common theory, right? And I've heard that. I'm interested to hear what Dr. Franks has to say about that.
Yeah, there are studies and reputable scientific journals on this. So yeah, this is not a crazy paranoid theory. This is definitely a reality, in particular in places like Great Britain, so in Ireland, right? You know, where it's mm-hmm. fairly small. So the studies that I'm thinking of were done in Great Britain. It is difficult to remove estrogen from the water. Like our regular water purification processes don't handle this very well, apparently. So it is the case that we are I once read a scientist who I think was in favor of the pill, but he talked about how it worked in a woman's body. He said it's like killing a mouse with a cannon, right? And so it's like this kind of brutal onslaught of hormones to do like this one thing to change the fertility, but it affects the whole body. You know, it throws everything off. It's a pretty dramatic effect just in a woman's body. By rejiggering the hormonal balance in a woman's body, it means that there's more of these artificial hormones now that are entering the water supply as they are, you know, evacuated from the female body. And so it is definitely the case that it is doing something to the environment. And you'll have to get a different guest on to give you all the horrific details. No doubt there are plenty of those.
Thanks for bringing that up, Teresa, especially this time with all we have all these concerns. Let me just throw this out for you, doctor. It strikes me that we have all these concerns. And in some ways, our society is so defensive about things like smoking or any kind of environmental degradation and all that. But we make an exception for things that are connected to the sexual revolution. It's like we want to be we want to almost wrap the world in bubble wrap. But if you say, well, this thing that is an aspect of the sexual revolution, like this heavy use of hormones like estrogen and progesterone and all that, is actually bad for the environment. No. We don't want to hear that because there's like an exception, an outrage exception for the sexual revolution.
Yeah, Helen Alvarez calls this sexuality-ism. She says it's this ism that says the sexual revolution has to come first and foremost. Like whatever policy, law, she sees it in family law,
right?
Like nothing is allowed to touch the sexual revolution. And if you think about it, it's very weird. You know, I mean, obviously the sexual drive is a strong drive. Obviously, you know, this is a powerful thing and so forth. But why has this become the thing that people will hear no dissension
right.
from? You know, it is kind of strange.
Well, I was thinking about that today when I heard that your state, Massachusetts, outlaws these e-cigarettes, but you can inject heavy contraceptions into the arm of a 12-year-old girl, no problem.
Yeah, and we're not thinking through the possible long-term risks of this sort of thing. We treat it very casually. Future fertility issues, which is huge. You know, we treat all cancer, all that stuff. We just are like, we're not going to think about that.
Yeah. Again, Dr. Angela Franks, our guest, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on the church and contraception, the whys and the whats of the church teaching on contraception.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm going to try to get to as many callers as I can. I know a lot of people want to talk about this topic with our very fine guest, Dr. Angela Franks, and I'm going to do my best. But callers, if you could, you could cooperate by maybe just asking your question briefly or making your point in a pointed way, and then we'll move right along. Maria in Pasco, Washington, listening on KHHS is up next. Maria, your question for Dr. Franks.
Hi, I actually am calling in with a comment, which I let the screener know. Professor Franks, I'm really enjoying this discussion, and I thank you for bringing it forward. I am an abstinent teacher, or was, for 15 years, and I contracted with private and public schools, and I just think that some of these conversations, for example, the health teacher that called in, I think he's sort of speaking past you. I think what you're saying is that education and giving a young student or a young adult the information where they can then make an informed decision is so incredibly important. And the course I taught was 8 weeks, and it went through decision making as in addition to all of the adolescent reproduction, everything. And when you inform students of how things actually work and the consequences that can happen, it's incredible how they turn around in a period of time to not see you as someone telling them what to do, but informing them of what their choices are. And so the more that we can inform children and young adults, I think the better. And I guess one example is when I spoke to parents at the beginning of the course, I would say, okay, how many of you have been a coach? How many of you take your children to piano lessons since they were little? How many of you took them here, there? And then I'd say, how many of you have ever talked to your children about sex education or reproduction? And it was amazing. They none of them had done it. They just expected somebody else to do it. And
Maria,
I think that's a big problem. Anyway, that's all.
Fair enough. I just wanted to get Dr. Frank's response. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's just so important. You're right that we have to help our kids. We need to form our kids in virtue. We don't, you know, very few parents. I live in New England. You know, very few people around here are like, yeah, you know, eat whatever you want, and when you get older, you can decide about like what's healthy and what you want to eat. I mean, like we take the initiative to form our kids from when they're young because we assume that they don't have the experience that they need in order to make proper choices, and so we assume that there's a good that they need to be working toward and that we can help them reach that good. And when it comes to sex, we throw all of that out the window. We don't think that there's a good, and we don't help them to work toward that good. And so I think that we need to remember that that's part of our responsibility toward children and toward teenagers to still continue to try to form them toward the good.
Maria, thanks. And thank you for all the formation you did for young people. I'm sure that many lives are better for it. Oh, I just lost the caller I was about to go to. Don't know what happened there. So we'll go to Michelle in Missouri, listening on the Simple Radio app, which is brand new to me. I had never heard of it before. Delighted to have you, Michelle. Your question.
Hello. It's a free app. I just somehow discovered it a few years ago.
That is right. That's my price point.
Catholic.
Free is my price point. Your question, Michelle.
Yes, mine too. Well, I was learning years ago because I'm out there, you know, online talking to people who think the pill is great. But anyway, one of the things that it does, how it causes the abortion, I just tuned in after Mass, so it hasn't been very long.
Wait, you went to Mass instead of listening to the entire program, Michelle? Can we talk about priorities right now? You went to Mass instead of listening to the first half of the program.
Right. I got in my car, and instead of listening like to a rosary, like on YouTube, I just plugged in and hit play.
Well, I'm sorry. Teasing you a little bit. So the point you wanted to make.
Okay. I've been trying to get back. Well, the one thing I learned is that it does allow, it's low enough estrogen that it does allow contraception, but it also will rupture the uterine lining so that the new baby cannot implant in the uterus as he or she should. And I think the implantation is a process called nidation or nilation or something. And it does say that somewhere on the pill package that it can impede nidation. And so also, I mean, so women could be, God knows how many millions of babies are killed this way.
That is a very fair point, Michelle. I'm gonna let Dr. Franks respond to that point. Do contraceptive pills work as abortifacients in some cases, or are they always just preventive?
Yeah, so I don't know what the most recent research on this is, but it is definitely the case that interfering with the natural hormonal balance can make you more prone to abortion, to spontaneous, what's called early spontaneous abortion. So in other words, as you said, the baby, the little embryo, does not implant in the uterus. So it's not the same kind of risk factor as, say, with the IUD or with the morning after pill, but there is certainly still this possibility. And again, this is not something that people know, really, even though it is on the packet in the warnings. But yeah, this is something that people should be more aware of.
Michelle, thank you very, very much for that and for letting me know that there's another free app that I can get. I don't have enough of them on my phone. Bill in Montana, you're the guy I dropped a minute ago. I'm sorry I dropped you. Your question for Dr. Franks.
Yeah, hi, Si. Thank you. Doctor, I wanted to get back to what you were speaking about with Margaret Sanger at the beginning of the program. So from what I understand, what you were saying is Margaret Sanger wanted to protect women more or less from their own fertility. And I think we've had ample opportunity to reflect upon what the real ramifications have been for this systemic and severe objectification of both men and women. And I just wanted to know what your opinion was on that.
Yeah. Thank you for that comment. So this is something that Paul VI talks about in Humani Vitae. He says he gives four prophecies, really, about what will happen if widespread contraceptive use comes into being. And one of them is that, in particular, he says husbands will objectify their wives. And even the spousal language seems quaint at this point because we're so far beyond, sex being really something that we consider to be only marital, only something between husbands and wives. But the objectification of women is pretty clear because if there is no risk of pregnancy, so people think, then that does mean that it's more likely that women will simply be treated as sexual objects. And so Mark Regnerus talks about this in terms of sex becoming cheaper, that the price for sex, if a man wanted to have sex with a woman, the price used to be marriage. Pretty widely accepted that was the societal price. And now that's just not the case because women can't anymore say, well, I might get pregnant. I don't want to, the man can just say, get on the pill, or if that doesn't work, get an abortion. And so these are the sorts of things that cheapen the price of sex, using this analogy. And so so it definitely has led to the objectification of women. But I think you're right for men, too, because like sex now is just whatever you want it to be. We've divorced it from that natural end of reproduction. And if that's not at play, then it simply becomes whatever the heck somebody wants it to be. And so men can be objectified, women can be objectified. And it's actually pretty dangerous, as we saw with the whole hashtag MeToo phenomenon, regardless of whether all those stories were true or not. Like, we did see that a lot of people did get hurt because people have this attitude of entitlement that there's no demands being made on them when it comes to sexuality. They simply can make it whatever they want it to be.
Bill?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And if I could, and I know you're pressed for time. You mentioned earlier about the serious side effects of high levels of sexual activity in adolescent women, and given that suicides amongst adolescents, I believe, is what the second highest leading cause of preventable death, doesn't the church teaching and reflecting God's wisdom kind of show why the church teaches what it does?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. It's just so important for people to grasp that the church's moral teachings are designed to make people happy. And that doesn't mean just, you know, passing pleasure or whatever. It means real human contentment. And real human contentment often means making sacrifices. It means being less selfish. It means saying no to things that you would otherwise like to do. But that's how you actually become more fulfilled as a person. And so it's no surprise to me at all that acting out sexually in ways that are immoral leads to more unhappiness because it goes against how God made us to be. We're not supposed to be using people. We're supposed to be loving people. And so, I think it's absolutely the case that the church's moral teaching reinforces genuine human happiness.
Bill, thanks. I really appreciate those questions. So we're talking with Dr. Angela Franks from St. John's Seminary in Boston about the church and contraception. One thing that you also started with in discussing Margaret Sanger was this idea that the woman's body is the problem and that a woman's body becomes a problem to be solved. So that would suggest to me that there's another approach, which is that what society expects of women or demands of women, for example, to be in the workplace is in fact the problem. And instead of changing women's bodies, and I totally get this idea from my good friend Gloria Purvis from EWTN Radio, that instead of changing women's bodies, we should be talking about changing society. Would you, as a Catholic, embrace that kind of view? And then what would the changes look like from a Catholic perspective?
Yeah, that's just so important that, you know, why is it women's bodies? Why is that the thing that has to change, right? The idea that there might be attitudes, you know, attitudes that expect women to simply be like men, right? Maybe those attitudes should be the things that change. And maybe, you know, we should have work schedules that accommodate the female body and its fertility and things like motherhood and so forth. Instead of having, I think it's Chesterton says, you know, why is, you know, the business world, why is that the guiding star that everything has to revolve around? You know, why isn't it the human person? Why isn't it the family that everything revolves around? And so, I absolutely agree with that, that we can't just simply view women as only having value if they're out there earning money or something like that. And as though forming human beings to be good citizens, good employers, good fathers and mothers, and you're like, as though that has no value. And so I do think that it's society that needs to change and not the female body.
Catherine, also in Massachusetts, your question, you're going to have to be kind of quick, Catherine.
Yeah, I'm going to be real quick. I teach children. I was a high school teacher, and I just want to say that they're confused. So can you clarify how contraception is dehumanizing to children.
Dehumanizing. All right. Would you agree with that contraception is dehumanizing, and how would you teach that to a child?
Yeah. So I'm assuming you mean when children are sexually active, when they become sexually active, is that the dehumanizing aspect?
Dehumanizing is, hey, Miss Whalen, you know, I had sex because I was given a condom by so-and-so, who's my grandpa or my uncle, and so I was told I do this. That's dehumanizing. It's okay. Marginalizing.
Yeah,
it's marginalizing,
there's very much this. Yeah, there's this attitude out there that kids are not capable of virtue. They're not capable of acting with dignity, treating themselves with dignity, and treating others with dignity. And then certainly if they enter into that cheap sex exchange, it is very dehumanizing. And this is something we see ample testimony to. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely the case that when we teach people virtue, which says, we think you're worth something. We think you're capable of doing hard things. We tell them to do this all the time in other areas anyway. That's the kind of thing that really builds them up as human beings and really helps them be aware of the dignity that they really have.
Thank you very, very much, Catherine. You did it. You got through that very, very quickly. Dr. Franks, you're just a wonderful guest. I'm delighted that we had the opportunity to have you on. I hope that you'll consider doing it again.
Well, thanks for having me, and have a very good drive home. I know you're dreading that.
Oh, come on. Now, that's just mean. Like, you know it's not going to be a good... Oh. Well, and happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can find out all about her at AngelaFranks.com. Her name is Dr. Angela Franks. And hey, tomorrow, we got a brand new show for you for Thanksgiving. Don't think we're leaving you in the lurch. So there'll be a brand new 2-hour show tomorrow. And then Friday, we're super excited about this. The first ever international version of Catholic Answers Live. Recorded live in Australia. We'll share that with you on Friday. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. We'll see you next time after Thanksgiving. We'll be back in these seats. We'll see you then on Catholic Answers Live.